Today on the Inside Flap.
A few years ago, there were a lot of think pieces or a lot of like criticism, really, about adults reading young adult literature, which I think is so silly because we don't lobby those same insults against adults who watch like Ferris Bueller's Day Off or Clueless or Meet Girl.
Or superhero movies.
Right. And, you know, like I watch the horror films that are banned in other countries. So it's very weird to suddenly be seen only as this one thing. And the horror novels were definitely a bit of a reaction to that. It was a very teenage reaction, I think, where someone says you're one thing and then you're like, oh yeah?
I like that.
Well, let me show you.
Yeah.
So, I want to see the rattlesnake now. And Andrew's kind of, he's creeping up behind me now. But he's making sure.
Yeah.
You know, just like a bear, you just need to be faster than the slowest person
that's
in the group.
That's exactly
so
right.
So, he's right behind me. So...
The Inside Flap is available on demand every week on iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and around the world on theinsideflap.com.
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado, this is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated across the table to my right, furiously hammering out a last-minute text, it looks like, is Andrew Dowd.
Excelsior!
I usually go middle.
To my left.
You're throwing
left.
Us.
What am I doing?
What's going on? It's okay.
Huh. And to my left is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
Howdy. Welcome to...
The Inside Flap.
Maybe, you know, because it's episode 99. Everything is flipped upside down with episode 99. You think that's why? Maybe that has something to do with it?
I think you were annoyed by Andrew hammering on his cell phone.
I think that was it.
Yeah. You brought your teacher eye. Your teacher eye went straight over to the pupil.
In a few minutes, I will tell you what I'm doing.
Oh.
Okay, great. I did set off the 99 alarm.
Oh, I totally missed that. Sorry.
I just... Let's see, the talk over one more time. It is episode 99. Ah, there we go.
You cut it so tight.
Thank you, Nina. Yeah, oh, it's tight.
There's
cut.
No, it's just cut. It just starts with her.
It's right to it.
Yeah.
Our show. Thank you for joining us. Our show today is brought to you by IndieBound. Make sure you're visiting our website, theinsideflap.com, and once you're there, click on the IndieBound link to head over there. Support us, support independent booksellers everywhere, and it doesn't cost you a dime extra. So we would appreciate that so much. Oh, and then it just ends.
That's good. I was kind of waiting for it.
All right, our guest today is Stephanie Perkins, New York Times and international best-selling author of books for teenagers and for adults with teenage hearts.
I like that.
Yes, well, that's in her own words.
I figured.
You didn't think I could write something like that, did you?
No, why.
Of course not.
I complimented it
in her own language. The 10th anniversary collector's edition of her excellent book Anna and the French Kiss is out now. Just out Wednesday. If you're listening to this as we put it out, Laura and I chatted with her a couple weeks back, and we just had the best time talking to her. Mm-hmm. So much fun to chat with, so engaging and fun, and we'll have that conversation for you in just a bit. But first, want to tell you all about a little adventure Andrew and I had. So we went for a little hike last week. So we went over to Morrison and took a little hike. Andrew's like, I gotta get a little exercise. I need something that's gonna kick my butt. So Andrew and I took a little hike, and he wanted something that wasn't too far away. I said, okay, listen, we're gonna go over to Morrison. There's the Mount Falcon hike, which you start down right outside the town, and you can take it up about 1,500 feet of elevation gain all the way to the ruins in 3 short miles.
And so let me say is, so we looked at hikes. We wanted an aggressive hike that wasn't too far. Now, one place we wanted to hike, we couldn't go to because there is an aggressive coyote in the, or not coyote, mountain lion.
Yes.
Really?
In the area.
Where was this?
Deer Creek Canyon.
There's an aggressive mountain lion in Deer Creek Canyon?
They shut down the entire open space.
Wow.
Deer Creek Canyon shut down.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Mountain lion shut it down.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wonder what's going on with the puma.
That's a huge park too.
Yeah. Well, they have huge territories.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So we figured, okay, no problem. You know what? We'll go over to
also, the you got to wonder, who was the first one to discover that the mountain lion was aggressive?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Because that's not just like a, we think there's one. That's a, oh, we've got one.
Right. But it was a beautiful day. And, you know, we were trucking up the trail. We literally barely got maybe a third of a mile, not even a half a mile up the trail, when this guy comes down and he's coming towards us and he says, guys, watch out. There is a rattlesnake on the trail just up ahead. And now, of course, living out here in Colorado, you've seen, we've seen mountain lions, or not, not seen mountain lions. Well, from a distance we have.
From the car.
But certainly we've been out hiking. I've seen a couple of rattlesnakes. You know, you keep them off to the side. You can skirt around them and you can continue on your way. You just got to be aware of them. So we're like, okay, thank you so much. We'll keep an eye. So we start creeping up the trail a little more, and we're creeping and we're creeping. We got our eyes peeled. Andrew is just a little bit ahead of me, and we're going up.
And now, and here's the thing is, we've typically, you see a rattlesnake, it slithers across the trail and it's gone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Exactly, I mean, yes. So that's what I'm expecting here.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what we're both now, all of a sudden.
Or it could have been gone already. You don't know.
Yeah. Or it could have been gone. Right. This was, you know, a few minutes later after the guy came down. All of a sudden, Andrew jumps so high in the air that I literally thought there were a couple of firecrackers that had gone off inside of his shoes. He shot straight up, landed like a cat, and scrambled quickly down the trail, immediately putting myself between him and where. And he's pointing up to the side of the trail and getting out the rattlesnake word. And I'm like, I don't see anything. I don't see it.
What happened, Andrew? Did you hear it?
No, and so I heard it and I saw it. And so what happened is, as careful as we were creeping, I'd walk past this one little shrub, and the rattlesnake was right there, and it was coiled up, and it was agitated, and it was ready to strike.
Yes.
Wow.
And so I said, I don't see anything.
Did you guys have like ankle boots on or anything like that?
What are ankle boots?
I don't know. You know.
No. Yes, we're wrapped in gauze and we put our mummy costumes on and then we put aluminum foil all over so the aliens couldn't. No, we're like
ankle boots. I don't know why I said it that way. Boots that covered your ankles is what I should have said.
Laura, bootlets. I left the hiking chaps at home.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
So, I want to see the rattlesnake now, and Andrew's kind of, he's creeping up behind me now, but he's making sure, you know, just like a bear, you just need to be faster than the slowest person in the group.
That's exactly
so
right.
So, he's right behind me, so, and I creep up more, and I'm looking directly into this grass, and it's like, it's scrubby, it's little shrubs, it's yellowish-greenish grasses, it's completely dry from our dry summer, and there's a whole field of it, I'm looking right, and I don't see it, and I'm getting up a little closer, and I'm staring in this one spot, and then all of a sudden I saw it the same second I heard it, and there was the sound. It was rattling. It was warning us off.
Wow.
But it was just amazing how well camouflaged he was. Yeah. Or she.
Even,
or
she. Even, even curled up. Now, there was more than one. There was a couple of them.
Wow.
And so by jumping out of the area, I could have jumped right onto another.
Was it like a nest? Yeah. A nest? Do you think?
Well,
no, we have no idea.
You know, as it gets in Denver here, it's getting close to winter. You know, it's cold at night. It's warm during the day. These things are trying to soak up the last bit of heat that they can.
Yeah.
And this is a nice open stretch with lots of, you know, sunshine.
Oh, I pictured it shady.
No, it was a whole field. It was like a whole grassy field. Oh, nice.
So they were sunning
them.
They were sunning themselves.
Yes.
They it were, could have been a whole field filled with snakes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, we were going to skirt over. To the left was brush. Oh, there was no way. No. High brush. We could not get through it. To the right.
Well, Dave was suggesting.
Sure. All right. Of course. Let's Dave would suggest straight. That.
Dave was suggesting. And I'm like, you know, there's multiple rattlesnakes. I don't need to take a risk.
And here's Dave. We can just go this way. Why don't we just walk around it this way?
Oh, well, let me say, the sound effect.
Yeah.
The rattle was much more aggressive.
More
than
rattly, right?
It was more like a hard rattle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I try to find something.
Because when I've heard it in Red Rocks, I think, on a trail off of Red Rocks with you one time, and it was a real rattle noise.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. and it was scary, and there were some people. So at this point, we're standing there trying to decide what to do. I'm taking rocks.
Dave's like, all hands up to walk through the shrubbery.
Well, I wanted to keep going, because once you get on the trail, you don't want to turn around. No. And there's no other way to go up this trail. So I start taking rocks, and I start... Now, I'm not going to throw it out at the snake. I don't want to hurt the snake. But I'm bowling rocks down the trail, and they're going right past where... And I, at this point, yeah, I still cannot see, because as soon as I backed away from it, it blends in so well, you can't see it. You know it's still there, but you can hear it. And I'm rolling the rocks, and you don't see anything. There's no movement at all. And there's a group of maybe at this point, six, seven, eight of us, and we had no choice. We all turned around, and we took our tails... Tucked them between our legs and got the hell out of there.
How far had you guys gone?
Like not even a half a mile.
Wow.
Now we had achieved a lot of elevation gain. So, you know, I think we had gotten like through the...
We had gotten maybe 100 feet of elevation
gain. Oh, come
on.
It was more than that.
maybe 200 feet.
That's funny.
But yeah, it was something else. Now, we'd been out... We have seen a rattlesnake before and had a stoned out of his mind mountain biker... Said, I'll take care
of
this.
I thought Andrew was with us when that happened.
With you, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. You were. Mm-hmm.
And that was at the top of this particular, same trail.
And he ran it over. This thing was like an 8-foot long rattlesnake.
Yeah, it was a monster.
It was as big around as my arm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got this, bro.
It was huge.
This, bro.
Yeah. You're right.
Took his mountain bike and rode right over the top.
And we're all just staring at this guy like, what are you doing?
Yeah, and I think, Andrew, you had a baby with you.
There was a baby.
Sylvia
was
with
it
us.
Dashiell on your back?
I think it was Dash. I don't know what other babies I'd be carrying. No, I don't know.
That's a good point.
That's a good point. Because it was a while ago. And yeah. I guess we had Sylvia with
us too. I don't really recall.
Maybe Sylvia was the baby.
But I do have, speaking of rattles, now I do have one interesting note from school I have to share with you guys. So listen, every week we have our what are called grade level meetings. So grade level meetings are where all the teachers of each grade level get together and talk about students who might need some extra help. And even though I teach kids of all grade levels, and I have a grand total of like 8 or maybe 9 now, 10th graders in all of my drama classes, I am lumped in with all the 10th grade teachers, and they gave me a homeroom class. They called it advisory class.
You're 10th grade Dave, right?
And I have 10th graders. I'm 10th grade Dave. Yes, on Friday afternoons, or in this case, it was a Monday afternoon. I'm 10th grade Dave for our 10th grade meetings. So, and we talk about kids. Now, we also, what we have to do.
I hope so.
Well, yeah. But what they also make us do is, so in these homeroom advisory classes, every day we show a PowerPoint presentation. And that is made for us by different teams for us to show. It could be about student council, study habits, leadership, stuff from guidance counselors, all kinds of stuff. And apparently, the administration doesn't think we're capable of simply showing these presentations ourselves. So every week at our grade level meetings, we have to sit there in our virtual meetings with a member of the administration in the meeting with us, kind of lording over us. And we have to literally go through each one of these 5 presentations slide by slide. So we're in there at our meeting yesterday, and we went through next Monday's slide, we go through Tuesday's presentations, all fine, and then we get to next Wednesday's presentation. Now, next Wednesday is November 4th, and if you guys aren't aware of that, it is a momentous day. It is the day after our election.
Tell you what, it won't be like any other day. How's that?
No, it won't. This presentation,
that
now
we know for sure.
This is their way of getting the kids ready for November 4th. This presentation is called Mindfulness and the Election. It is structured around the concept of a peace circle. There's a slide in there that tells kids, quote, it is helpful to ground yourself with deep breathing or positive affirmations. And there are helpful sentence stems like this one. When blank happens, I feel blank. I am feeling word about blank because blank. And this whole slideshow
weird
ends. Now, here's the weirdest
confused
part.
Confused.
The very last slide has the Serenity Prayer on it.
Oh, that's strange.
But of course, we can't have prayer in school, so they call it the Serenity Wish. And I'm not even kidding. They took out the God word, but it's grant me the strength to accept the things I cannot and all that stuff. And I guess what they're doing is they're preparing us for the possibility that you know who will win. And our students were 95% Black or Latino. Let's just say they are not the biggest fans of the guy in office right now. So this is where we're at. We have to literally
That's crazy.
Prepare a peace circle for our students for next Wednesday.
So think about this, right? Is where's the direction coming from, right? I mean, is this happening?
It's mental health.
All
I
over
bet
the
it's
country?
The guidance counselor.
Yeah, it's our mental health team.
And I agree with you, Andrew. I wonder where they got that from.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily think it's a bad idea. Right. I mean, you know,
but it's strange.
It is the whole religious thing aside. But I think they're worried. I think they're worried about, you know, what's going to happen the day after the election.
Yeah. Well, 4 years ago, there were kids screaming. There were kids crying. There was the high school.
So that's
down
why
the
they're
street.
Upset
they,
with it.
They marched over to our school and joined forces. Protest.
Oh,
it
I didn't
was,
realize
it
that.
Was madness. It was madness. So they are looking ahead.
Well, that explains
and,
it.
Yes.
Because I was thinking, man, when George Bush was elected, I didn't have my teachers weren't checking in with me
but
to make sure I was okay.
These are the things you now have to think about this.
It never crossed my mind.
You know, and I remember 4 years ago when Trump won the election and mm-hmm. we were sitting there watching the results come in.
Yeah.
And everybody's expecting that. You know, Hillary would have won.
Yeah.
And then they're like, this looks like it just went for Trump. What's going on here?
Yeah.
And it was like, it was kind of like everybody was shocked the next day.
It was complete shock.
It was shock. It was absolute shock. But we'll see how next week goes. Laura, how has your week been?
My week has been one of realization. I have been realizing that I have been down, like depressed, just for probably a month. Oh, that music's about right.
There you go, yeah.
And, I love, like, fall and decorating and Halloween. I haven't done anything. We hung up this is kind of ironic since you're playing this music, but we did hang up a Snoopy flag.
Yeah, we did hang up the Snoopy Halloween flag.
That's all I've done.
As far as we got. I was in the garage and cleaning up a little bit. I look up and I saw the big box of Halloween supplies and I was like, eh.
Yeah, I don't feel it. And unlike Andrew, like our kid's 14. She's not going to be trick-or-treating. She's going to go somewhere with friends.
Right.
It's just different.
What's the point?
It's different. And I feel like, what's the point?
Yeah.
I'm depressed. Nothing's changing. Everything's on fire. The election felt like it's taking 10 years to get a vote.
Yep.
Like, I'm over it. Yes, Dave.
There we go.
But one thing has cheered me up.
Oh, really? Okay. Whoa, whoa. Hold on.
And it has
okay.
cheered me up with regularity.
Yes.
And I'm talking candy.
Oh, yeah. We're talking candy.
So I read the other
Hell
day
yeah.
that Halloween candy people were worried that this would be a bad year for candy sales because...
There's this candy music.
No one's going to be trick-or-treating. So
oh, right,
in theory,
yeah.
people aren't trick-or-treating.
Right.
However, candy sales are up. As no surprise.
Are they up, really?
Because if you're human, it doesn't surprise me, right? Right, Andrew?
Kind of fix,
not surprising to you.
No.
I mean, shocker. So I thought instead of doing a best Halloween candy list, I pulled up for the year 2020 the most commonly referenced 10 worst Halloween candies.
Oh, like
now,
this.
I actually like some of the ones on this
Uh-oh.
List.
Yes.
And I thought we could go through and just react.
Okay, sounds good.
So I'm going to go from 10 to
10
1.
10 to 1, please.
1
10
being
to 1.
The most hated.
Yes.
So number 10 is licorice.
Oh.
Now, I kind of like...
disgusting.
I kind of like licorice.
The worst.
I feel like if I ate enough of it, it might kill me, but I kind of like it.
My kids love licorice.
Yeah, I like licorice too. Number 9 is Good and Plenty, which is also licorice-y, right?
No, very...
No, thank you. That's like an anise flavor
candy.
Is that
anise flavor?
Like when you go to the... The only time I'll take that flavor is that after a nice Indian meal and you get into the bowl with the little spoon, you dip in and you get the
not,
little
not during COVID.
Flavor candy.
Not during COVID.
Not now. That's true. No salad bars.
I don't know what this candy is. I've seen this name before. A Mary Jane?
Oh, the worst. The worst.
Okay.
Although I bet you,
it's
knowing Andrew's predilection for Charleston shoes and Bit O' Honeys, I bet you're a Mary Jane fan, aren't you?
Yeah, it is like one of the stickiest like things. I mean, you definitely, okay, if you have fillings before eating one of those, you're definitely going to lose a couple.
It's like a hunk of caramel wrapped in a wrapper from the 1920s that your grandfather had had in his back really pocket. Funny.
You could use this, that stuff as construction.
That's
adhesive.
So funny.
It's nasty.
Number seven is the Tootsie Roll, which sounds like it's a lot like the Mary Jane.
Yep.
Except not as...
No, thank you. No fun. What's the pleasure in that? It sticks to your tongue.
That's a terrible
Not a lot of chocolatey. It's like a artificial fake chocolate flavor. Yeah. Yeah, don't care for that.
Yeah. Number six, I don't know what these are. Necco wafers.
Oh,
I don't know what that is.
No.
What is that?
They're these thin little chalky wafers.
Yes. Chalky wafers. They're about the size of a quarter.
I don't think I've ever seen one.
And I heard that back in the day, you were traveling on the highway and they used to have those automatic toll dispensers.
Yes.
You toss in three quarters, you could toss in some Necco wafers.
That's really funny.
That's about all they're good for. Yes. They're like swallowing pieces of chalk.
Oh, so funny.
For the other Catholics out there listening, the wafers that you get during communion have more flavor than Necco.
Yeah, that's true. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, here's a candy that I adore.
Uh-oh.
And I don't know why it's number five. Smarties. I love Smarties.
Oh, yeah. I'll take a Smartie.
Do
any
you like
day
Smarties, Andrew?
I don't really like them. And I think that's what it comes down to. They're hard, right? I mean, you can't chew them.
No, you have to suck on them. Although, do you want to know what middle school kids
did? Yeah, I know what middle school kids do.
They crush up the Smarties, Andrew, and then they snort them.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
You give a middle schooler a substance, they'll find a way to snort it.
Yeah. And then I haven't seen this in a really long time. It has the same ranking as it did in 2019.
Hmm.
I haven't seen it since maybe 1980.
Yeah.
It's the wax Coke bottles.
Yeah, that's old school.
That's real old school.
I might give that one a ding just for the nostalgia effect.
It's the nostalgia.
I haven't had one of those suckers since childhood. I believe the waxiness, and then you get the little jolt of a sugary, like over sugared.
It sounds intriguing.
Flavory liquid inside, and then you get to chew the wax.
I kind of remember chewing the wax.
Yeah, I remember chewing.
But Dave, it's not a sucker.
Not a sucker. No.
And it's not a Reese's peanut butter cup, let's face it.
No.
Number three, I've never eaten one. I've seen them, but I've never, ever desired to eat one, is a Circus peanut.
Oh, God. Now,
they're
the circus,
big and orange. Andrew's looking like he...
Yeah.
And I think I have seen them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've seen them. I've never eaten one.
They've got like that fake... But I think they come in two flavors, orange
like
and yellow.
Butterfingery
you get
flavor?
The fake banana flavor.
Oh,
and
banana.
Then the orange... Oh. That's the only time you can get that flavor is with these orange circuits. They have a flavor unknown to man. That's the only unrecognizable anywhere else except in an orange circus peanut.
It's like eating the foam insert of your sneaker.
That's what it looks like.
That pretty much, after you walked around for about a week. Yeah.
Yeah. Without socks on.
Yeah.
That's really funny. Number two, and I'm not sure what these are, peanut butter kisses? Because I know chocolate kisses and I love chocolate kisses. I don't know what a peanut butter kiss is. I'm assuming it's just peanut butter.
I think if I recall, Hershey's put out one year or maybe a couple years, they put out Hershey kisses, but it was just.
I'm surprised that one's
peanut
hated.
Butter.
Yeah, well,
but it's hated.
I think it's because basically they're so soft and with the temperature and everything like that I just don't think they hold up.
It also
real well.
Could be that people think it's going to be like a cup, a peanut butter cup, and it's not.
Oh, wait a second. No, it's nothing like that. Oh. I've seen these before. They come in black and orange wrappers.
Oh, those are nasty.
They're misshapen.
I've had that. Those are nasty.
No, these are really nasty.
Yeah.
These are also.
I didn't know what that was.
Probably made by Brock's. They're really old.
I can almost taste the last time I had that. Like
they're wrapped in wax paper. Orange
they taste
and black
like disappointment.
Wax paper.
Yeah,
it looks like some creepy guy made them in his kitchen.
Yes, it does. And the inside is like some creepy guy made
it. Yeah, those are really nasty.
Yeah, and then the number one, which I like, but I always see memes and stuff about how awful this candy is, and I bet you guys can guess because I think it's like. It's kind of like the election. You either love it or you hate it.
I would say bit o' honey.
No, number one is the candy corn.
Oh, yeah. No, thank you. Some people love them, though.
Yeah.
I've seen the candy corn. People devouring them.
I like candy
them.
Corn. Yeah.
But
I try not to buy it because I do enjoy
it. My kids like them. I have no particular. I might eat literally one or two a year.
Oh, I could probably eat a whole bag if I let myself, but
they
I don't
have a strange stale flavor about
I
them.
I like the stale flavor. Ugh, yeah, no, I like no that. Thanks. They taste like corn, concentrated corn syrup is really what they taste like.
Because that's pretty much what they are.
Now, I had something interesting happen to me just yesterday. So, you know, Sylvia is a big fan of Skittles. So mm-hmm. we got our Halloween candy. We got some to hand out. We got Skittles, small individual bags of Skittles. Now, I love Skittles. I've eaten Skittles for a long time. But here's one thing that I don't like. I love all the different colors of Skittles. What I don't like are the green Skittles. So they're nasty. They're terrible. And I've never known why I didn't like them. I just found out yesterday why I don't like the green Skittles.
Why?
Because in 2000, and I read about it, in 2013... Because first of all, when I'm biting into a green Skittle, I'm ready for a nice lime flavor, right? It's green, it's going to be lime.
I hate the lime candies.
So yesterday, I said, like I always do, I took all the red ones, the yellow ones, the orange ones, put them in my palm, and took the green ones aside and set it on the table next to me. Ate all the
I sort
good,
them by color.
The good red, yellow, orange ones.
You eat the good stuff
ones.
First?
I ate all the good stuff.
I always eat the bad stuff first.
But I don't eat the bad stuff.
Oh, you throw
That's
it
my
out?
Point. The green ones sit on the coffee table. I'm sitting there reading, I'm like, that little bag did not satiate my sweet tooth. And I'm looking over at these green Skittles and I'm thinking, why don't I like these green Skittles? I pick one up and I'm going to get to the bottom of why I don't like them and why they don't have a nice lime flavor. I put it in my mouth and I'm tasting it. I get it in there and I swirl it around. I literally get on the palate. I get a nice, good taste of it. And I realize it's not lime. It's apple. It's a green apple flavor. And I looked it up. And back in 2013, much to the consternation of lime Skittle fans everywhere.
Who is a lime Skittle fan?
This guy right here.
Is that your favorite?
I don't know if it was my favorite. I guess it's been, 7 years since I've tasted it.
I hate the lime.
But they don't make lime anymore.
Oh, that's weird.
They changed it in 2013 to green apple flavor. Who the hell wants apple flavored candy?
I liked the green apple because I had a Skittle bag, as I've been saying. I've been a little down, so I've been using sugar to boost myself up.
Yes.
So I had a Skittle bag and I eat the ones I'd least like first.
Yeah.
So I ate the greens and I was like, oh, they're not as bad as I remembered.
The only good thing about a green apple is you can dip it in caramel.
I would never. I would never ever do that.
And put it on a toothpick.
Yeah. You can stick it wherever you want.
Andrew had a rough week along with a lot of other people. Andrew,
yes,
how are you doing? What is up?
So, it's funny sitting here recording tonight, right? Because, we have the story about the rattlesnakes, which I had almost forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And then, about a week ago today, my cameras in Montana basically caught, in the backyard, right, of my relative's house, a huge mountain lion.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the video of this thing. I mean, this thing is a monster. It looks like it belongs in Africa, right? Not in the woods of Montana.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I was ready for some a nice quiet week, but it did not happen. And so Wednesday morning, I'm up in Granby, Colorado, which is near Grand Lake, Colorado. I went to work in the morning, so my head's in the computer at 7 a.m. 4 in the afternoon, I go step out on the porch to get ready for a nice mountain bike ride, and I look out, and there are the forest fire, obviously, no sign of it in the morning. It's a couple miles away.
Mm.
And so, and this is Wednesday evening in Granby, Colorado, and, and so basically over the next, 90 minutes, this thing went from a couple miles away to literally being a couple hundred yards from our house up in the mountains.
And you guys had there was like 50 mile an hour winds up there whipping this sucker.
Mm-hmm. It was very dry.
Yeah. The largest, I guess this was not the largest, but...
It's the second largest.
The second largest fire in the history of our
state. The largest one is very close to the second largest, and they could merge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the thing is, looking at these between the number one and the number two is... They're only a few thousand acres apart in size, mm-hmm. right? So which one is actually larger doesn't matter. But what happened Wednesday was unprecedented. It was historic. The fire started out the day as a 10,000 acre fire. And within 24 hours, it had grown in size from 10,000 acres to over 125,000 acres. Mm-hmm. And, you know, historically, they believe this is the fastest a wildfire has ever grown. Mm. And, you know, I'm standing here looking at it. I took some pictures. I sent Dave some pictures.
You can post, we're going to post them up on the website. So check out theinsideflap.com.
Can I say, too, because, Andrew, you called us from downtown Granby.
Yes.
And then you also did a Facebook Live with downtown Granby, and you're showing like the fire behind you. And we could barely hear what you're saying because the wind from behind you, which was so frightening to hear this wind behind you. And you're
smoke.
Standing there and it appears like you're being cheerful, even though I know you're like, oh, there's a fire. But you look like you were like, da 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 da, and there's a wind and there's an enormous fire behind Andrew. And under the comments, everyone's comment. Like, you're leaving, right?
Get the F out of there. What the F is wrong with you? Get the F away.
And then every once in a while, Andrew's like, I don't know if you can hear, but the wind's really strong. And we're like, we know. Yeah. Go. Run for your life.
Well, screaming. I had the car packed. The dogs were in the back of the station wagon. Yeah. You know, I had a clear means of egress. And the thing is, where we are, I wasn't worried about our safety from the flames because there were...
I don't know why you wouldn't have been. It was right there.
Well, because there aren't woods. Like right next to our, like where our house is, there aren't woods. There's fields. And the fields did burn. And the fire ended up getting, you know, within a couple hundred yards, right, of where we live.
Yep.
But we're looking up the hillside. So, you know, probably less than a mile from where I'm standing, you know, you've got 50, 60 foot flames. Mm. You have 1,000-foot columns of smoke. I mean,
oh, immense! You could see them, you know, for
hundreds of miles.
Hundreds of miles.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, they make their way all the way to the other side of the country.
Yeah.
But you know, but just standing there and seeing that, unbelievable. You know, now there was, you know, some loss of life as a result of this.
Yeah,
they estimate that, you know, maybe as many as 400 homes were destroyed.
Yeah, shocking amount of homes.
Yeah. And you never even thought about leaving until it was the mandatory evacuation.
Mandatory.
Well, I mean,
and
again,
it was dark, wasn't it, when they came and got you?
It was pretty safe where I was. I had a clear way of just getting in the car and driving straight away from there, right? And that was never in question.
Your road was south, and this fire was right to the north of you, right? The northwest.
Well, the fire was heading east. And I am due south of the fire, but where it started getting tricky is the wind started shifting more southerly.
Mm.
And that's when, as soon as the wind shifted southerly, and I sail, right? So I have an experience, right, as far as reading the wind, because if you sail, especially small boats, you know, it's small changes in wind. And so basically, as I'm standing there, it's like the wind just shifted, right? And that's like, now it's time to really get out of here.
Yeah.
So,
and did they come and knock on your door? How'd they let you know?
Oh, they did, yeah.
Yeah.
In the community, they drove around on golf carts, just pounding on people's doors.
I picture some wide-eyed, wild-haired guy frantically running around.
And that's pretty much what it is, and they're just pounding on doors, basically saying to get out. But, you know, the firefighters, they did an admirable job. And one of the things you learn about fighting forest fires is they have to pick and choose, right?
Yeah.
Right. What they fight, where they fight, and where they don't. They have to pick their battles. And so what they do is they try and protect, you know, let's say towns. And so they did a fantastic job because the entire town of Granby could have been lost.
And mm-hmm. Estes Park.
The
and
entire
Estes
town Park, of, yep, Estes Park, the entire town of Grand Lake could have been lost. And they managed to keep the fires out of the more concentrated places in town. But now, people that had these remote houses in the woods, absolutely no hope for them. And there was a couple who tragically died because they chose not to evacuate, knowing that it could be the end for them. But they were down in their basement. But the forest fire is so extreme that even in their basement, they were not safe from the flames.
That made nationwide news, I know.
Well, we're glad you're safe, and you guys go to our website, theinsideflap.com, because really, we can't do it justice to see those pictures, and I know Nine News picked up your picture and put it on their website, and now I guess
Andrew was so close. It was freaking
charity organization has picked up his picture and is using it to promote their quote-unquote charity to help firefighters.
Yeah, really?
And I hope it's a legitimate charity.
I hope it's legit.
I am not. They did not ask my permission. They just, I guess they liked the picture. And
it's a beautiful, eerie eerie picture.
It is a well-framed.
Yeah. You were just picture. Right. I mean, I couldn't get over it. And then to Dave, I was just so worried for you. I was like, why is he still there? He needs to get out.
Well,
and then
I can
finally you
understand.
Got the evacuation order, and I was like, okay, good.
You're looking up at something you've never seen before in your life, and you hope that you will never see again in your life, mm-hmm. and it's hard. You just hypnotized by it. I can understand wanting to just stay there and just
my
take
natural
it all in.
Inclination is always to flee.
That's true.
And the thing is, like I said, the car was packed. I was ready. I was absolutely ready to go.
But did they give you a timeline? Like you need 20 minutes to get out?
No, leave now.
Leave now.
You need to leave. You need to leave now.
Man, it's frightening.
Mm-mm. All right. Well, you left and now you're back here and we're glad you're back here.
Yeah, and your house is safe.
And your house is safe. And maybe we'll do episode 100 from it. No, it'll probably be 25 degrees up there.
Well, episode 104 we should do up
there. Yeah, we'll do episode 104. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we're joined today by our guest, Stephanie Perkins, New York Times and international best-selling author. She's got a brand spanking new collector's edition, 10th anniversary edition of her book, Anna and the French Kiss. And I know Sylvia absolutely loved this book. Laura, you love this book as well. Want to tell us a little bit about it before we dive into our chat?
Yeah, so this is Anna and the French Kiss. This is this author is a favorite of Sylvia's.
Mm-hmm.
So if your daughter is into romantic comedies like ours is, this is absolutely perfect book for her. And I don't mean to preach at all about this, but anytime Sylvia has raved to me about a book, I have gone out of my way to read it.
Yep.
And I have enjoyed talking with her about it. So just if your kid expresses an interest in a book, even if it's something you think, I don't want to read that.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the case in this one, but even if it is, read it. You might be surprised and you can talk to them about it. And I think it's a nice little gift with your preteen or teen.
That's right.
And Andrew, you've read a lot of Dashiell's books, I think.
I've read some of them, and it's nice when he reads something.
It is,
and then
isn't it?
we can talk about it, we can connect about it. And
it is.
And it's nice to see, you know, because when you start reading books, right, mm-hmm. and you start to get that excitement from reading a book and exploring a different world, but it's nice to see, you know, those lights come on in your kids' eyes.
It is. And Sylvia reads different books than I read when I was her age. And at first I was like, I don't know what she likes. And then I found her jam, which is romance.
Mm-hmm.
And so
when you were reading Stephen King.
I was reading Stephen King at her age,
Stephen King as well.
For sure.
Yeah.
But you just got to roll with it. And I like the romance too. So I've got no problems with that. So anyway, I highly recommend that. So I enjoyed Anna and the French Kiss. This is the story of an American teenager. It's her last year in high school, mm-hmm. and her parents send her to a prestigious boarding school in Paris.
Ooh.
Exactly. So this is a fish out of water story. Anna is from Georgia. She's never been to Paris. She's not terribly sophisticated, but she is really into films.
Oh, wait, I've got my Georgia sound effect over here.
Yeah, what is that?
Oh. Georgia sound effect.
That's funny.
Mash those two together.
Oh. Doesn't work.
Oh, I think it works wonderfully. All right, anyway.
This is a teenager trying to find her crowd, her people, and the story shows her growing up, going to see movies by herself, figuring out how to place, you know, an order for food in a new language, all things that have the potential to be scary, embarrassing, and they're very relatable. There's a really cute boy with great hair.
Oh, yes!
There's great food descriptions that I really enjoyed. And the city of Paris is just a beautiful setting. And it's described, it's just fantastic. So love this book and love this absolutely charming author, Stephanie Perkins.
Nice. And we really enjoyed our conversation with her. She was just a delight to talk to. And here's that conversation for you right now.
And you don't stop because you can't. This whole pandemic thing is like such a different experience than what I've done in the past. And suddenly it's like, oh, now I'm going to do all the things that I never did before because I can't do the thing I always did.
Is it, I read on your blog that you're an introvert. Is it easier for you to not have to go out?
Yes and no. Like, I was used to the other thing. Like, I'm very, very introverted. And like so many authors,
I'm sure you guys hear this all the time. Like, this is, publicity is not the easiest thing for us. I'm sure it's not.
Yeah.
You know, we're, a lot of us are good writers because we're really comfortable being home alone for long periods of time, talking to nobody else. It's all internal. Like, I can keep myself company very well.
I completely understand that.
Yeah. But I do like people. And so, I enjoy the events. I have the sweetest readers. Like, they are genuinely, like, really, really nice girls and women, mainly. I've got lots of guys come too, but, like, mainly, like, just, like, sweet as pie, genuinely. And I remember what it was like to be, like, on the other side of the table and be really nervous. And I do feel like it's part of my job to make them feel comfortable. So, like, I do take on this, like, extroverted personality. And, like, I was kind of, like, wear the same dress and, like, do big hair and makeup. And so it feels like putting on a costume.
Oh, just like an actor. Sure.
That's helpful.
Method acting performance.
It is every time. And, like, then I can take on that role. And it's fun. But it's very tiring because I'm introverted. And so... unlike, you know, an extrovert who would get a lot of energy from that, every time I'm doing it, like, it's going to drain me of the energy.
Absolutely.
So in the past, I've been really scared of, like, my words can get garbled. So I was, like, avoiding podcasts a little. And, like, I was just still all those, like, remnants of teen girl years of being like, oh, I don't want people to see me. And so, like, avoiding video stuff. And this year, like, that's all out the window. So hi, here I am.
Well, listen, you came on, you were smiling, you were ready to go. We would have no idea.
And Dave just dumped a La Croix.
I just spilled half of my La Croix.
Oh, that's my favorite flavor, by the way.
Oh, the key lime? Yeah, actually, this is key lime. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the only one my husband and I keep in stock. Oh,
that's really funny. That's really funny. Well, he's cleaning that up. See, I mean, we just do things like this to make you feel more comfortable.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
We're in Littleton, right?
Yeah, we're in Littleton,
Colorado. Yep.
Thank you so much. My agent is in Littleton.
Really?
Kate Testerman.
Oh, wow.
And so I send mail to Littleton all the time. And I was really excited when I saw that's where you all were.
So
I've got
cool.
like very fond feelings toward Littleton.
Yeah, we're in the downtown area. We're in an old carriage house in my office. Yeah.
Yep.
Did I read somewhere? Okay, this is going to sound like I'm stalkery, but if I'm doing an interview, like, I want to know who I'm talking to. Yeah,
we did some research on you too, Stella Perkins.
Little credentials,
right, Laura? So I saw, Laura, that you're an interior designer. Did I read that you have a house built in the 30s?
Yes, we do.
Yeah,
yeah, okay, absolutely.
I do too.
Oh, I love
Very fond of that era.
Me too. I look it up and think about it, and been thinking about trying to get and dig around in the city to find more about it. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
How long have you been in that house?
We've been here only 5 years, and just love the neighborhood.
And not so much of a fun having an old house when you have to fix it up all the time.
That is true.
Oh my God, seriously, there's no surface in this house that we have not touched. We have now been in this house for like 16 or 17 years.
Oh, that's a long time.
We moved in like right after I graduated college. And every single thing from like plumbing, electricity, the roof, the windows, like every single thing.
Yes. Nothing's easy. Nothing's easy.
No.
And we still only have one bathroom.
I know. We have one on the main floor. We're actually adding an addition, but we have a 14-year-old daughter who I'm going to mention because she's a huge fan of yours. Yes. Yeah.
So where do you live?
So I'm in Asheville, North Carolina.
Oh, so beautiful.
Yeah. We're in the very artsy kind of liberal pocket of the state.
Yes.
In the mountains. It's just so beautiful. You know, everybody here like does ceramics for a living. It's like that kind of town.
That's what I picture with Asheville. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah.
So that's really funny. Nice. Well, thank you for joining us for this 10th anniversary. I'm sure you can hardly believe it, about Anna and the French Kiss. And my daughter and I both loved this book. It's a romantic dramedy about a young American in Paris. I'm assuming that it changed your life, but how did it change your life?
Well, thank you for having me here. It's really exciting to hear that both you and your daughter have read it. I really appreciate that. It changed everything. It's, you know, this book came out when contemporary young adult fiction was not very popular. Oh. It came out right after the paranormal Twilight kind of yes. boom, where like that was still lingering. Those books were still popular, but you could kind of tell it was waning. Mm-hmm. And the next big thing was dystopian, The Hunger Games, Divergent. So like there really, there wasn't a huge market for this. Now that market never goes away because there are always people who are going to want to read realistic stories, especially romantic ones. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't the market that was like being trumpeted and celebrated and you know, the smash bestsellers. So, you know, it was a modest contract. And I had been a librarian for years, a bookseller before that. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I knew that, you know, most books and most authors aren't known. And I had very modest expectations, and all I wanted was the published book, and that hopefully, you know, someday someone would discover it in their library and write me an email or something.
Wow.
Low expectations there.
No, I kept it very low, and it felt
That's
healthy
good.
That way.
Yeah.
And that, like, I always try to keep those expectations in check, and am I doing this for the right reasons? And the right reasons is it still giving me pleasure and enjoyment to do it?
Awesome.
And so, yeah, it just started growing by word of mouth. I got a huge boost from the author, John Green, who at that time, his career was big, but it still wasn't as big as it got. It's his huge mega bestseller, The Fault in Our Stars, was not out yet. It was before that. But he had quite a following. And he had, you know, called out my book as being really a good one on his vlog. And so I got all of these readers from him.
That's awesome.
We share an editor, and I always joke to my editor, I'm like, you need to write him a publicity check because that's where it started. And also because of him, because it was coming from the mail, it meant that I got a lot of male readers too, which otherwise I don't think I would have gotten with such a girly title, and my original cover was even girlier than it is now. And I really appreciated that because I do think there is a lot to offer everyone. It became this kind of this thing that just kept growing by word of mouth. You know, it never hit any bestseller list.
I didn't realize that.
It's not. And yet I have sold way more copies of it than anything else. Like it's another story that I tell authors too, where like hitting the list, like that's not actually like where your career is at. Like things can happen on a really, really slow burn and snowball into something very unexpected. Like you just never know in this career, and it's really hard to like plan or hope for certain things. And I feel really lucky. I've talked to other authors who've had successful debuts, and they feel really sad about that because then there's this pressure on everything they produce after that. And like, oh, I'll never make anything as successful as that first book. And for me, I'm like, hell no, it's great. Like, I'd rather my most successful book be my first one so that I can like, yeah, like give me those royalties, whatever. Yeah. Like, I don't care. I think it's wonderful. It was so unexpected. It allows me to keep publishing books, even if, you know, they aren't as big. You know, I'm fortunate that people still want to work with me. It's amazing. Like that one thing gave me a career, a whole career. And it was just so unexpected.
That's absolutely amazing.
And now with the collector's edition, you get a nice new shiny cover. And what else do you get? Looks like there's a map in there that you've annotated. What do you get in that with this collector's edition?
Yeah, it's so... like, it's so beautiful. Like, it's so, like, stupidly, stupidly, outrageously beautiful. And I can say that because I did not design it. Like, it is not my work. Like, it's the kind of thing that if I saw in a store, I would buy just, like, as a pretty object. Yeah. And, like, well, this has got to be great.
Yeah.
It's really cool. It's one of the most special things is... of course, now my mind is going blank. The sprayed edges. So like when you look at a book on its side and you see that the pages, that part has been sprayed a color and a pattern.
Ooh.
And the pattern is 0.0.
Yeah.
The center Paris, which like is a thing in my book.
It's a big thing. Yeah.
My characters make a wish on it. And so they put that pattern on the side. And that's a thing that those sprayed edges, you find them a lot in the UK. The UK does a lot more like specialty editions than America. But it's a really, really hard to convince an American publisher to do that.
I bet.
Color or anything. Because it's cost prohibitive, and it's just not a thing done here. So people aren't thinking in that mindset. But my editor, Julie Strauss Gable, is the kind of woman who can get stuff done.
Oh, nice. That's who you want in your corner. Yes.
Great. She's amazing. Very determined. So there is one printer in the entire world, it's in China, that can do this. And that's the printer that this book was sent to.
Wow.
So it has this really unusual packaging. And they hired this illustrator and letterer who actually lives in Paris to do all of the artwork that's on it. When you open it up, there's some on the end papers too as well. And kind of throughout, sprinkled a little bit. And then, yeah, we made a map. The designer in-house at Penguin did that. And then I got to annotate it with little notes about my characters.
Oh, that's fun.
So it's a map of Paris, of course. Mm-hmm. And the whole package is just crazy beautiful. And, like, I didn't have anything to do with it, so I can brag. So gorgeous. And definitely not a thing that was even, you know, talk about author bucket lists. This wasn't even anywhere close to that. I didn't know this sort of thing was a possibility. So I'm just so grateful and kind of blown away by it. It's really pretty, you guys. It's so pretty.
It's awesome. Hey, you know, it's a shame they don't do that with more books, because it would be so nice to have like a really cool book to go to walk around with and to share and get people to say, oh, that looks awesome, let me check that out, you know, just to bring more people into reading, you know, just to have that nice ownership of something, you know. We like shiny things. We like to have shiny things. Why can't our books be shiny too?
You can see my office behind us talking here. Like, I like shiny, pretty, bright things.
Yes.
I honestly think, and I'm curious about your opinion on this. I feel like that might be the future of publishing. I think, you know, as ebooks and audiobooks continue to be like the main thing, the main way books are consumed now, you know, there's always going to be, I call it like the vinyl level collector. Yes. Whereas, you know, like CDs disappeared, but vinyl is still raging amongst collectors. And I think that's going to be that way with books, where it's like maybe paperbacks slip away, and that's what the e-readers are now, are essentially replacing paperbacks. But hardbacks are still around, and I think those hardbacks might get more and more special. And this is maybe like the tip of that.
I'd love to
in this
that.
Country, because it's definitely happening overseas.
Oh, that's it. Well, it'll definitely get here then.
Yeah, and what now? And when you just maybe with this pandemic, it could actually help, because when you turn on the news and you got all the talking heads, what does everybody have behind them?
They got
all their books, right? Everybody's got to show how smart they are. They got to have. We have a few books, but we're out.
Minor
outside,
design
but.
Books, so. Yeah, right. Our regular books are inside.
Yeah.
Are there a couple behind
you? I see them behind you, yeah.
But most people, you know.
The tip of the iceberg.
When you're an author, you don't necessarily have to show, you know, your books. Oh, why would you, you know?
That's true.
It's expected there are books in this
house. That's true. That is true.
There definitely are. We just built these amazing built-in bookshelves upstairs. That was like our big pandemic project.
Nice.
So my library has expanded.
Nice.
Which is very exciting.
Good for you. So I still remember when our daughter first read this. It was probably a few years ago. It might have been last year, but I think it might have been 2 years ago. We were on a road trip. She was in the back seat, and she was just erupting with gales of laughter at this book, like over and over. And then there were lots of like gasps, and she was excited. And I was like, what are you reading? You know, and she's like, Anna and the French Kiss. And of course, this is my 12-year-old daughter telling me that. And I was like, oh. have you heard, I love the book too. I read it, and it was exciting for me to be able to share something, you know, with her. Have you heard from mothers and daughters who have read this book together? I'm assuming you have.
I have, and I can't even one up that. I heard twice from a mother daughter grandmother combo.
Ooh,
and
nice.
Yeah,
it's so special, and I really do think there is a lot of adult appeal in this book too. You know, I think there's, I don't know, a few years ago, there were a lot of think pieces and a lot of like criticism really about adults reading young adult literature, which I think is so silly because we don't lobby those same insults against adults who watch like Ferris Bueller's Day Off or Clueless or Mean Girl
or superhero movies.
Right. And it's the same thing. It's those same stories that are really worth exploring. And those teenage years are so memorable. Mm-hmm. And because everything is like new and fresh and happening to you for the first time. And we all remember all of those like frightening, exciting hormonal explosions, all that passion of being a teenager. And I think that's, you know, what we're responding to when we watch those movies. We remember it brings us back to that. And it's the same with the books, too. So I really don't see any difference between them. So I've been fortunate to have a lot of adults reading these books, too.
I bet.
And then it's also now that it's been out 10 years, I've got the people who started as teenagers and who are now adults. And that's really special, too. I've gotten to watch them. People like go from reading my books to now working in publishing.
Wow.
And it's really thrilling. Yeah.
That's so cool. You know, there's a little part in the book. St. Clair gives Anna a Canadian flag patch for her backpack so that she can be more accepted in France.
Oh, yeah.
And I was struck that 10 years later, I would probably, you would do the same thing.
Even more so now, even more, give her three Canadian flags, patches.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Have you ever done that or thought about doing that?
Absolutely, I have thought about doing it. I haven't done it yet, though I do own a Canadian flag patch. So if I could travel again, might be slapping it on my bag for the first time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I always did think it was like kind of the smartest way. I'm trying to think if there is a chance maybe I've said I'm Canadian. Never. I'm really struggling. Like, have I done that lie? It's not a lie that I would be ashamed to do.
Yeah, no.
Or scared to do. But sometimes it's rough being an American out there, man. We're.
I know.
Yeah, it's not pretty. It's not pretty.
And I do genuinely love Canada. And my husband and I visit it occasionally. We really like Newfoundland, kind of the rural part of Canada. Let's get as far away from America as possible.
Yeah.
but it's really beautiful. The people are so kind. So, yeah, I'm up for lying about that one.
All you got to do is throw in a couple of boots and say, "Hey, I'm from Canada, eh?"
Yeah.
You
know.
Right?
Call people a hoser, you know, tell them to watch Strange Brew, and that's it. That's good. Yeah. Bob and Doug McKenzie, you know.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
So there's also, in terms of food, so I'm switching the subject to food. You have delicious French food descriptions in this book. Mm. And I really enjoyed the comparisons. It was such a great treat because, you know, she's an American in Paris, so you get to explain things in a way that doesn't feel like you're dumbing it down for the reader, because it's something that a teenager probably wouldn't know about France.
Yes.
And you probably opened a lot of teenagers' ideas that maybe the food in their own country isn't, for the most part, very healthy.
What are you talking about? What, our food is not healthy here? I don't know what you're talking about.
But I loved that. Like, there's a fast food scene, a French fast food scene with like a salmon ricotta. I've still remembered this because I was like, oh, I got to make that sandwich.
Wow.
And chives. Are you a...
Forget the chives. Make sure you don't forget
very important.
The chives.
Are you a foodie at all?
Yes, I would say, yeah, absolutely. I love food. And even more than that, I love descriptions of food in books.
Me too.
Like very specifically, ever since like I'm a kid. I feel like in children's literature, of which I read a lot, I still read a lot. I love children's literature. That's why I'm here. There are just so many magical, wonderful scenes with food in children's literature and in fantasy. And I really enjoy talking about food, reading about it. So inevitably, the thing that I always do when, you know, I'm drafting a book is I write in way too many scenes where my characters are just sitting around talking and eating. Like, all I want to do is write dialogue and like describe food. And so in the revision process, I always have to take out a couple of those scenes. Like, there's still always in all of my books a lot of food and talking. But I like it so much that I have to edit it out.
That's really funny.
All I want to talk about.
I love the food. And then you had the coffee and I was like, oh, I wonder what their coffee tastes like. Yeah, it was really good. And then so my daughter loves this genre. It's her favorite genre. She's read all three of the books in the Anna and the French Kiss series. She's talked to me about them. Was it important for you? Did you think about it at all to provide some more lighthearted reading to a teenager, to teens? Because you mentioned that it was Twilight and it was dark and it was angst ridden. Not that your book doesn't have a lot of angst in it, actually, but yeah, there's humor.
Quite a bit.
Yeah, there is quite a bit.
And to be honest, I don't think Twilight is a really dark series either. Like, you know, they give it the black colors with the very dramatic,
good point,
or black covers with the very dramatic.
It's a romance.
Photos.
It's a romance.
But they're very like wish fulfillment, mm-hmm, fantasy kind of. And I feel like my book aligns very closely with Twilight, actually, and that it is this big over the top love story that has a huge happily ever after ending.
Absolutely.
And that was very on purpose because I enjoy when I read a love story, I really want that like ending where I know they're going to be together forever and ever and ever and ever. I really like that. And so, that was just me writing a thing that I wanted to read. And luckily other people want that too. And it's not to say that it's all like really like light and fluffy. Like, it is a really like fun, sweet read. But, you know, if you're writing something that's essentially a fairy tale, like, to earn that happily ever after, you the character's got to go through some stuff, right?
Yeah.
So there is the darkness and sadness mixed in. But overall, you know, I want some to, you know, shut my book and go, like, that's how I want that to end. And then, you know, the books that I wrote after that, my next novel was a horror novel. And
I saw that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Next year is also a horror novel. So,
a little bit of a switch.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah. It is. And that was a little bit of a reaction to people who were like, see this sweet side of me. And because when I, you know, we talked about earlier, when I go do an event, I don't know if that was when we were recording this or when we were just chatting, but when I go do an event, I put on like these big frilly dresses and I do my hair nice and like wear this kind of like author costume. Mm-hmm. And so this idea kind of started being floating around like, oh, that's what Stephanie Perkins is. She's this like colorful, sweet. And like, I love that. I want to be known as that. Thank you very much. Yes, please. But at the same time, I'm someone who loves horror and true crime, and I consume massive quantities of it. And I always have. And my house is filled with like animal skeletons. And, you know, like, I watch the horror films that are banned in other countries. Like, so it's very weird to suddenly be seen only as this one thing. Mm. And these the horror novels were definitely a bit of a reaction to that. It was a very teenage reaction, I think, where someone says you're one thing and then you're like, oh, yeah?
I like that.
Well, let me show you.
Yeah. Yeah. So you don't want to be pigeonholed either.
No,
it doesn't,
right?
It doesn't feel good because you're not a one-dimensional person. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think a lot of authors definitely do struggle with that. And I like all genres of literature. There really is no genre that I would not consider writing in and that I don't have ideas for. And I really thought like, oh, if I don't switch genres soon, this is the only thing that I'm going to be allowed to publish.
Ooh, like,
I don't need to publish anymore, or I'll have to start writing under another name. Mm-hmm. So it was important to me early in my career to say like, hey, I've got other things that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry that it's not the book you want from me, because of course it's not.
That's
of course
funny.
It's not.
I love horror too. I'm excited to read it. I just got it on for out for Sylvia, so I think she'd like it too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yay. It's good for this month, the month of October.
That's right.
It's very Halloween centric. I love Halloween, and so it takes place the week of Halloween. Bonus, if I can plug for a moment.
Yeah, plug away.
Someone Inside Your House. It's currently on sale the month of October, the entire month, $2.99 ebook. Ooh. Across all platforms. It's a really great time
That's
to get it.
That's a great deal.
The movie comes out sometime next year. Netflix is making it. Like, it's read it before you see the movie. Like, yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, that's awesome. A good one.
Yeah.
I'm glad and we asked you about that.
It's called There's Someone. What is it?
It's There's Someone Inside Your House. And it's a very traditional slasher. So I really, really wanted to write something that felt like the movie Scream.
Yeah.
And initially it started, I wanted to read something like that. Mm. And there really aren't a ton of things that fall into the slasher category in literature. I'm like, okay, well, that'll be my next project. And I found out really quickly why that's the case. It's because the slasher genre like definitely relies on those like jump scares.
Right. Yeah.
Hard to do in a book.
It's really hard to write. It's I think that's why in literature, like when you go into the horror genre, psychological thrillers are very successful in books.
True.
You can write that really well.
Yeah.
That kind of like action plot based, it's a little harder, and especially for someone like me where like plot was never my greatest strength, so it was definitely a new tool that I had to learn and flex. So it was really fun. It has been really fun. And I'm also ready to do something else. My next book is also horror. And then after that, you know, I'll pivot again.
Awesome.
Maybe a little sci-fi.
I was thinking,
maybe
some
fantasy.
Sci-fi.
That's right.
Ooh, fantasy would be fun.
Western.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Like throw on the Spurs.
One of those weird Westerns. Yeah.
Yeah. I do kind of love a modern Western. Like growing up as a kid, I wasn't into Westerns. My dad watched a lot of them, but you know, it's all the John Wayne stuff, which, yeah, I recognize his merit, but it doesn't have a lot to offer like women or people of color.
True. Right.
It's pretty bleak. But I really love that modern Westerns have been tackling all of those issues.
Yeah.
And so it's weird to grow up and suddenly, and I'm not speaking about literature at this point because I haven't read any modern Westerns. I would like to. If any of your listeners have recommendations, please send them my way. But there has been a lot, you know, in terms of cinema and television. There's some really great stuff out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Led, of course, by Deadwood, which I think kind of revamped all of that. Deadwood is so great.
Yeah.
Very long tangent about Westerns.
I could talk about Westerns all day with you. I love Westerns. Uh-huh. Yeah.
All right, Steph, it's time now for our segment we call Quick Six. Six quick questions in which we find out a little bit more about you. Here we go. What is the last show you watched and binged and really enjoyed?
So super excited. Going to sidebar you again from your own podcast.
All right. Love getting sidebarred.
Just several episodes of this before we started recording. So I know the six questions that are coming.
Spoiler alert.
A little bit.
Wow, you really do
prep,
your homework.
Doing some prep. I like that.
Wow,
yeah.
You're good.
Nice.
Yeah. You're really good.
So this one is really easy because just this last weekend, my husband and I have started binging the show Taskmaster.
Ooh, I haven't heard
so
of that one.
It is a British panel show. And in the UK, you'll love this, it airs on the network Dave.
Oh, I'm off. Hey, now I'm excited.
That's right. But in the US, they upload it to YouTube. So it's on YouTube legally, so anyone can watch it for free.
Excellent.
And so it's this panel show with five comedians who perform these very, very, very silly, ridiculous tasks. And another comedian judges them on who does it better and more imaginatively. It's just the perfect, like, lighthearted, fun thing right now. No stakes whatsoever. It's kind of what we all need right now. And the second season of it, your recent guest, Mr. Richard Osman, was on that entire season.
Oh,
and he did great.
Really?
Okay. Oh, I bet he did good.
I did that interview with him, by the way. Yeah. Thank you for having him. He's one of my favorites. And I bought his book after listening to
it. Oh,
it's
so good.
That's awesome. It is so good. Oh, my God. It's so good. It's, yeah. You're going to love it.
I was thinking about his book in the shower this morning for some reason.
I realized he had one. And when I was looking, like, okay, what do I want to listen to? Right away, of course, I'm going to click on Richard Osman.
Yeah.
And I was so delighted. It sounds hilarious.
It's really funny. It's so very good. Memorable. Yeah. It got in my head a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah. So the next question, Steph, is...
Well, she already knows the next question. Maybe she should...
What is something that people often get wrong about you?
So everyone... Not everyone. No. Let me backtrack that. Get a little less hyperbole in my language. I get mistaken for being a left-handed vegetarian all the time.
Oh, that's very specific. Oh,
wow, so specific.
I give off the vibe, guys.
Wow. That's really funny.
Huh. Right? In college, people at my college, there must have been some rule that every class had to have a left-handed desk in it because they all did.
Oh.
And multiple classes over my 4 years, I would come into the classroom and the other students would be like, hey, we saved the left-handed desk for you.
That's so bizarre.
I'm like this quiet introvert. Like, it's not like I was even talking to people. Like, I was surprised that they like knew me, but B, that like they made this strange assumption about me.
That is so strange.
It is. And I mean, like, they aren't that far off in terms, like, I am ambidextrous. So, like, I write and I eat with my right hand. So, like, I need that right-handed desk. But I play sports left-handed. I play musical instruments like guitar, percussion. I do that left-handed. So, like, it is there a little bit. But, like, whatever it was, I was giving off that vibe. So
that's,
they were saving me
the desk. That's real. They got your artsy creative side, and they're like, she's artsy, she's creative.
She must be left-handed.
She's left-handed.
And a vegetarian.
Yeah. Well, you, that's celebrity, right. You most resemble. Do you get Molly Ringwald all the time?
I do.
Yeah.
My sister does as well. She's also a redhead.
Oh, that's really funny.
Yeah. Yep. So I love that. It's very flattering. I don't see it myself, of course, but I love it. Yeah, she's the one I get.
The young Molly Ringwald, of course.
Yes. Yeah.
So what?
She's amazing now, you guys.
Is she really?
She does, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I've seen her recently. Oh, maybe I have. She was in a teen movie that I watched with my daughter.
She wrote a book a couple of years ago. I think it's a picture book. My memory is now... Huh. No, it wasn't. It was for adults. But anyway, she was on kind of the book tour circuit the same time I was. And I did see her at a distance at some festivals.
Wow.
And she's lovely.
What is a movie you would not skip past while flipping through the channels?
Okay. So the first one that pops into my mind... it's not necessarily my favorite movie, but I love it because I do feel like there's a difference in this
question
between a movie and what you're not going to skip past. And so for me, there are many, but right off the bat, Jurassic Park.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, I would not have gotten that.
Laura Dern, Jeff Goldblum.
Right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The actors are all so great.
Yeah.
You've got the humor, you've got the dinosaurs who are eating people. Like, it's got everything. I love it. It's Spielberg.
Yeah.
I know people are like, Jaws or Close Encounters is Spielberg's best film, and I'm going Jurassic Park. I love the heck out of that. You know, the book was the first adult book that I ever read. I was in sixth grade, so like it kind of solidified with me. It was before the film came out, so every kid was reading the book. I love it. I love it. Jurassic Park all the way.
Yeah. All right.
And Jeff Goldblum.
Away from it.
I mean, you can't get tired of watching Jeff Goldblum act because he's so unusual.
So interesting.
Yeah.
Well, you got Samuel L. Jackson in that film.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Like, it's so good.
That's good.
Newman, Newman from Seinfeld. Yeah.
And his death is such a good death.
It is a good death. It's a classic one.
I love a good death. As someone who loves horror, that's a good death.
What is a book you'll never forget?
Oh, okay. I think this is the hardest one because this is like every book, right?
Yeah.
There's so few books that I
that I do forget. I feel like so many more things, you know, like you read it, it becomes a part of you. You see something that reminds you of it. Like, but in terms of, I feel like there's kind of two categories or two places where my mind immediately went. So I'll just say them both. And one is that childhood discovery of Charlotte's Web and my mom reading that book. And how that book really holds up too. If you read it as an adult, it's beautifully written literature. And I really don't know anyone who read it as a child who still doesn't remember, yeah. you know, all of the words that Charlotte wrote on her web. And if you hear the word salutations, like immediately your mind goes there, like you're thinking of Charlotte.
Yeah.
So it's funny going back to my vegetarian thing, like I didn't eat pork for most of my life. It actually stopped when I went to France, for Anna related research, but, I didn't eat, pork from first or second grade on because of that book. So it did have a big impact on me in that way too. And then, in the other way, like The Stranger Beside Me and Rule, the Ten Bundy book.
Oh, yeah.
Ten Bundy book. Like, yeah. That's a, for, there's no scarier book that exists out there, period. It's terrifying. And it changed the way that I look at the world and I think about it all the time and how I interact with people. It was like so many people who, like myself who love true crime, it was the one that just changed everything. Do you guys know the background of that book?
No. I think she'd known him for a while. Is something like that?
I do not.
At a suicide hotline with Ted Bundy. They were saving people's lives together. She was friends with him. She was many years older than him, so she wasn't like his victim type. So she was always safe. She was already, you know, like a mom who'd already had a career ahead of this. She was, she worked for a police department for a long time. Then she left and she became a crime journalist. So she was still in contact with all these officers. So like she was even talking to officers about these crimes while he was, you know, before he had been caught. And, you know, then she'd go to her night volunteer work at this hotline and she was working beside the guy doing. So it is this story about her like wrestling with once she finds out, and it's fascinating, and it launched her entire true crime writing career, and she's obviously one of the most successful true crime writers ever. And it all came from this very strange connection to one of our most notorious serial killers.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fascinating, really scary. It's so good, you guys. It's so good.
Wow. It sounds really good.
All right, you are a self-professed introvert, so we don't know if you have an answer to this one, but do you have a go-to karaoke song?
Like, no. There's no way you can go on stage to sing karaoke. And it's you're as likely to get me on a cruise ship. Those are two things that I will never in my entire life do. They both just sound like a nightmare to me. But okay, if it's like ye old gun to the head scenario.
That's right, yes. That's what we're looking for. Sure. Those ye old situations.
Let's harken back to that.
I'm gonna go Beastie Boys, mid-career, something like Sure Shot or So What You Want. That way I get to go up there with like my husband, who's also a big Beastie Boys fan, and like another friend. So there's going to be three of us on stage. Oh. So immediately, like, I've only got a third of the eyeballs on me.
Yeah.
There you go.
And we're rapping, not singing. And it's like funny. So people are laughing like on purpose and not because I'm really bad. Like, that's the way I can handle karaoke.
What a great strategy.
That's the exact same strategy I employ. And I would always go up and do Will Smith, Parents Just Don't Understand, because you can act that out. Yes.
Strong choice. Yeah. Laura, I don't think I've ever heard you answer this question.
I like to do Katy Perry's Teenage Dream. And I also like to bring other women and we do like a girl band. Yeah. Kind of thing where we kind of do it a little stylized.
Strength in numbers.
Mm-hmm. Strength in numbers. And then it's like tongue in cheek also. Yeah. So, which you have to do. Yeah, there's no doing this seriously.
No.
Terrifying. No. Can you imagine going up there and being sincere?
No. I can't either. Yeah. So, last but not least, what book are you currently reading?
Okay. So I'm usually listening to an audiobook and reading something, you know, on paper. Mm-hmm. So the audiobook that I just recently finished is Catch and Kill, Ronan Farrow's book.
Ooh. Oh, okay. Wow.
It was great.
Okay.
And so it's about the Harvey Weinstein story, which just sounds so depressing, and especially tough in a year like this.
Yeah.
It doesn't really sound like fun listening, I would say, and I had avoided it for that reason, even though I really respected the work that he'd done. And then I heard an interview with him. I think it was on WTF, Mark Maron's podcast.
I heard that interview too. Yeah.
And it was so great. And I was really charmed by him. So I'm like, I'm going to give this a listen. And I loved it, you guys. I could not stop listening. It was one of those where, like, you start listening and then you start making up chores to keep doing.
Yep.
Can keep listening.
Yes. Yep.
It was one of those. Once I started it, I did not stop. It really was, I think, two like sittings or, you know, like chore groupings. Like I just inhaled it. And the reason why is that it's actually incredibly inspiring. So it's about taking down this very dangerous, bad man. And it's about all the people who fought so hard to make it happen. And it's not just Ronan. It's all the people he was working with. And then all of the people who had been trying for decades to take down Harvey Weinstein, who knew, who had heard the stories. And so it's about, you know, like bravery and, you know, Weinstein and his team did not make it easy on them. It was very scary for them. And so it's really the story about heroes. And I found it so inspiring. And it was like what I really wanted to hear right now. It turned out like how to take down these like big, scary men. Mm-hmm. So I recommend it as an inspirational thing. So if any of your listeners are like, yeah, I heard it was good, but I avoided it because it just too heavy right now.
Yeah.
I think it's great for right now, actually. And then last night I finished reading The Voting Booth by Brandi Colbert. It is a young adult book. It's a love story that revolves around Election Day.
Ooh.
So she's one of my favorite writers. I worked with her actually on an anthology that I edited a few years ago called Summer Days and Summer Nights. So I love her writing. She's one of those auto-buy authors for me. And so it came out, I think, in June. I bought it right away. And then it just kind of sat there because I was like, whoa, election, right? And so it was staring at me on my stack. And I'm like, well, if I'm going to read it now or never, we're in October. Like, I better get this done.
It's coming.
And so, like, I had a little bit of tightness in my belly as I picked it up. And no, it was really sweet. It was the same thing with the Ronan Farrow book. It was one that was actually, like, filled with hope. That's and awesome. She's such a good writer that the story was great and it had that nice balance. And it's one that I hope a lot of teachers will put into their libraries in the schools, because it's also one that, you know, there are no politicians' names mentioned, no years mentioned. So it'll really be a good perennial title. And it was a huge surprise. And it shouldn't have been, because she's a great writer. But it was, because it made me feel really, really good about the whole thing. And I felt like I needed that.
That's great. Yeah, I know. We all need that right now. And young people do, too, because they're aware of it and wish they could vote in some instances.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
That's great.
All right. Well, Steph,
thank you.
This has been so much fun. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having me, you guys.
Really appreciate it.
Great to see your faces, too.
Yeah. It was great to see you, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Looking forward to the Netflix show. I'm looking forward to reading the horror novel.
Yep.
And then looking forward to the next book next year, too.
Yeah. Thanks so much again. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Right. Bye, you guys.
Bye. The Inside Flap. All right, there you go. I told you that was a lot of fun.
She's the best.
And she really is. She really is the best. She brought it, so we appreciate that. And did our homework. Like, she knew the questions we were going to ask before we even asked them.
Oh, and she recommended The Voting Booth, a YA book, and Sylvia's got that in her Kindle and is reading it now.
Nice. Very
loving
good.
Loving it. Yeah.
All right, let's open it up.
The library is officially open.
Time for some
book reviews.
Let's start with
Laura Medicus.
Laura, what do you got for us this week?
I have The Patient by Jasper DeWitt.
Mm.
So I bring you horror in time for Halloween.
Oh, it's not a medical thriller?
No.
No?
In time for Halloween. So this book is written out as if you're reading it on an online forum.
Yes.
So kind of like a forum in maybe Psychology Today crossed with Reddit a little bit. So you can see what the person is posting, but you can't see the comments. Mm. Although the writer does allude to them sometimes. He's like, oh, wow, you guys had a lot to say about this,
okay,
you know, last week. So I love a diary format like this. I think it gives a writer a way out of having to describe every little thing. Mm-hmm. I think it moves the story along very quickly. And I think for horror in a diary format, you can write it really well because it's unfolding as you're reading. There's no huge flashbacks in it. It's fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah.
I do appreciate the diary format as well. I'm trying to think of, there was one that was just on the tip of my tongue. Maybe I'm thinking of Dracula with the letters.
Oh, yeah. I like the letters, too. Yep. And this is kind of written like a little bit lettery, too. So the narrator is a psychiatrist who's taken a job at a state mental hospital in Connecticut. This hospital has one patient who has been there. There's more patients than one. But there's one particular patient who has been there since he was 6 years old. He's never left. He's in isolation, and he's an adult now. And every person who's tried to treat him or room with him either commits suicide, attempts suicide, or goes insane.
Why would they put anybody in with him?
Well, they don't anymore. This was when he was a little boy. When he was six, they didn't know what they were dealing with.
A roommate from hell.
So our narrator...
I've had some bad roommates before.
That is a bad roommate.
That's rough.
So our narrator, Dr. Parker H., we just know his last name is H., is told to steer clear of this room, avoid this patient at all costs. So,
sure.
What type of young hotshot doctor is going to be okay with this role? I mean, right? You're not going to come in and not do that. So this is the story of Parker's attempts to treat, talk to, and help this mysterious patient. So this is a wild short book. This is supernatural horror. This is not psychological horror.
I do have audio of the doctor talking to the little kid.
Here's Johnny.
That's funny. Very close.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's creepy. I read it compulsively. So this writer, Jasper DeWitt, actually posts stories on a Reddit thread called No Sleep. And I think that this book started that way. And
then
he got it. Yeah, got it turned into a book. Have you guys ever logged any time with Reddit?
I stay well away. I know those commenters can be very snarky and not very pleasant to be around. So the only time I go on Reddit is to find NFL football game streams.
Oh, do you really?
NFL football. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. Andrew, have you been to Reddit?
Allegedly.
I am going to plead the fifth.
Okay.
That. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that means he's one of the posters.
No,
he's deep into Reddit.
I've never commented. I've never commented or viewed anything.
Reddit creeps me out a little bit. I feel like there's a lot of conspiracy theories on Reddit.
It's just a lot of snark.
And I get a little, I feel embarrassed to post anything. I feel uncomfortable by it. Like, the whole situation makes me uncomfortable. Yeah. So it's kind of interesting. I've read another horror book that also was on Reddit. So I guess I should check it out because I think people will post.
Maybe there's some good areas of Reddit we're just not aware of.
Well, I think a lot of it's probably good. It's just, it's scary.
You need to look for the Dummy's Guide to Reddit.
The Dummy's Guide to Reddit.
There you go.
Yeah. So I recommend this book. It's a really quick read. It is what I just said. It's psychological horror about a very strange inmate at a psychiatric hospital. Mm. And it's called The Patient by Jasper DeWitt.
All right, and that's recommended by...
So, Dave and Laura, have you ever spent any time at a mental hospital?
No.
Just between 8 and 13. Other than that.
I punch-listed by myself the fifth floor of the Queens. It was the Queens Hospital.
Nobody knows what you mean when you say punch-listed.
Oh, sorry. As an interior designer, you sometimes have to go into a building before people move in after it's been erected and finished. And you just need to check to see what things need to be fixed.
Okay.
So flaws in the paint, ceiling tiles.
Andrew's over here claiming he knows what
all kinds
what
of things.
Means.
Andrew knows what I mean. And so I had to be on this psychiatric floor of the Queens Hospital.
Mm,
and I will never,
creepy.
And I was by myself.
Yeah.
And it was very shortly after 9/11, and for some reason there was an alarm that was going off almost the entire time I was there on another floor. Yes. And I was by myself there.
Really?
I had to take a train out from New York City to Queens every morning, and I did this for a week. And there were rooms with padding on the wall and like a thing that you could look through. The walls were painted. I'll never forget the color of green they were painted.
Ooh,
and it was not
creepy.
It was awful. Let me tell you. Yes, that was me. My little work shoes.
That's your
and I had a clipboard.
Wow.
Yes, Andrew.
So I grew up, and we had a family member that had a short stint at a mental hospital in, mm-hmm. in Pennsylvania. And by short, I mean like 20, 25 years.
Oh, wow.
And, okay. And so as a kid, every couple of weeks or month, you know, once a month, we would take a ride across a couple states to
we're
go
We're
going
to go see
visit.
Grandpa. Let's go.
Yeah, well, grandma in this case.
Grandma.
And, you know, and her issue was she just simply couldn't deal with reality. Mm-hmm. She had suffered some serious tragedies.
Breakdowns.
In her life. Yeah. And, you know, and so she just could not deal with reality. And so that's why she was there. But, you know, it's a very, mental hospitals are a very sobering. Mm-hmm. I remember, you know, always seeing strange things there.
Yeah.
You know, like we drive up one time, there was somebody swimming in the middle of the road.
Oh,
you know, everybody there smoked cigarettes.
Yes.
They don't trust them with lighters, so they have these things on the wall so they can light their cigarettes.
Oh, really?
On the wall. Everybody's asking you for cigarettes.
Well, you know, this is interesting. Oh. I have a friend who did studies at, what's the Pratt?
Enoch Pratt is a library.
Oh, Shepherd Pratt, which is a mental hospital in Maryland.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they did studies with schizophrenia and nicotine, and it helps them. It makes their brain, if you're schizophrenic, it calms your brain. So nicotine is, they were looking into how to help schizophrenia with nicotine and how they could help that.
Yeah, but that was part of my childhood is growing up visiting those places. And they are, you know, they are bizarre. Mm-hmm. It's a place kind of where time and reality seem suspended.
Yeah.
And perhaps they are.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I thought you were going to give me a book recommendation.
All right, calm down, Moss. All right. So that means it is my book.
Yay.
And this week, the book that I am recommending is called These Women by Ivy Pacoda.
These Women.
Let me tell you something about this book, These Women. This is a dark, chill. You know, I like my books dark.
The only thing
I like darker than my coffee are my books. And this is a dark, chilling, disturbing novel. Mm. Set in Los Angeles, specifically the West Adams area of South Central Los Angeles, where women over the years are systematically being murdered. And there is a pattern. These women are all, you might say, seedy. They're street-level hustlers in some way. They are the prostitutes, the strippers, the drug-addled and discarded, the castaways, those women on the fringes who get swept off the street and into the prisons and then bounced right back out again. The strugglers, the survivors clinging to existence, always hustling for their next buck or their next fix. These women are the ones getting murdered, and it seems as if there is a serial killer out there who is targeting them. Mm-hmm. And this book tells the story of these women in a way that is tragic and heartbreaking as we follow and get to know five of the women who live in the area. So the way the book is structured is we get inside these five women's lives and bounce around in their heads as the narrative takes off. So we get Dorian, and Dorian is the woman who runs the fried fish place, and her daughter was one of the women murdered, and she is actually still haunted by the presence of her daughter that she sees everywhere. Hmm. We have Juliana, the private dancer, struggling to survive. Felia, a former prostitute with an old neck wound, desperate to get the cops to listen to her that she is being stalked. Mirella, a performance artist, and Annika, her mother, who is concerned about where the neighborhood is headed. And finally, Essie. And Essie is the undersized, gum-chewing cop who doesn't drive. She actually rides her bike everywhere and is trying to put all the pieces together and might just be the only cop who actually gives a damn.
I like a bicycle-riding cop.
Yeah, she's great. And just really, you know, I'm not a big gum chewer, but she was constantly throwing pieces of gum in her mouth and kind of made me crave like a nice piece of wintergreen or winter fresh.
Wrigley.
Do you guys have a favorite gum flavor?
I like Big Red.
You mm-hmm. like Big Red?
Thanks for
that
asking.
Big Red flavor mm-hmm. sticks like right red. To you. Your
I'm not
fresh
a, I'm
breath
not
goes
big,
on and on while
I'm
you
I'm not
chew
a
it.
Huge gum chewer, though.
Yeah, say goodbye
all.
A little longer. Make it last a little longer.
Right,
Andrew, what about you?
Okay.
Oh, gum flavors don't matter to me.
Really?
I'm not a big gum person.
Right. Yeah, I'm not either. Yeah.
Juicy fruit?
Juicy fruit tastes great when you first start, but the flavor's gone immediately.
And that's always the problem with gum, is the flavor being lost.
So is this a new take on the gumshoe genre?
I don't know. Maybe. She does a lot of, she doesn't walk. She rides her bike. So it would have to be, I don't know.
You need a shoe to ride your bike?
That's true. But maybe she wears, I don't think she had the clip on bike shoes. But anyway, the cops don't give shit about these women who are getting killed. It's up to Essie to try to figure out, the only one who actually cares. So the book just lays these women's lives out, and we see it all and we live it all. The desperation, the pain, the torment, the simple struggle to survive. These are the women you would see in the street and you would look away, the cast down, the outcast. And yet here we get to experience their heartache and their anguish firsthand.
Sounds tough.
It's just absolutely heartbreaking and astonishingly told. It's also not your typical, sometimes you read a serial killer book for fun and the fun is in the hunt and the pursuit and the chase of it. This is dark, grim.
The chase of the serial killer, not the serial killer's chase. You should point that out.
Not following the... exactly. Because there is the hunt for the killer here. This feels more authentic, more real. This is some real life, modern day Jack the Ripper type stuff that's going on. And we get inside the heads of these women. They are brought to life by the author, even the cop, who's a woman who's not taken seriously by her peers and by others. And what really elevates the book is just the power of the writing. It's so well written. She, Ivy Picota, hell of a writer, brings us into this world, this neighborhood, the street, which she calls the Western. And once we're in there, we don't want to leave, even though we want to get the hell out. I kept thinking of The Wire, because they would talk about the Western. Here it's a street, but... she really forces us to take a good hard look at the lives being led and the choices they are faced with and the desperation they live by. This is brutal, honest, stripped to the bone humanity laid bare on the page, asking you to pay attention, and attention must be paid, for their lives depend on it. It is so, so good. It is These Women by Ivy Picota. And that is recommended by me.
Dave Medicus. Sounds great.
Yes, check it out. It's so good. Really good. Andrew, what do you got for us this week? Andrew
Dowd. So it's interesting because women play a very interesting role in the book that I reviewed this week.
Oh, and your book is called Those Women, is it not?
No.
No?
Okay. So
ladies.
Yeah, the book I reviewed this week is Finwell Bay. It is the third book in the Shaman Tales series by
Welcome to the Ladies' Man.
Sorry, oh, nice.
By Nathan Lowell.
Nathan.
So now we can, does that mean I can retire this Nathan Lowell drop?
Okay, you haven't read everything I've written.
Because I think you have now.
It's a little lesson, life lesson, is don't ever say you've read everything by an author.
Never say that to an author.
Now, reading a review recently, I had somebody in there that says, I think I've read almost everything you've written.
That's what
right?
you say. Yeah.
Is you always leave a little clarifier there.
Okay, you haven't read everything I've written.
Yeah, yeah. So, in any case, the second book in this series, which is actually Cape Grace, that was a very dark book. It was a very serious book, and Cape Grace had a lot to do with, Otto Krug, his daughter Sarah. She turned out to be a shaman, but the world of St. Cloud did not allow women shaman. And so...
Oh, right. I remember you talking about
this book. I
remember
this too, yeah.
Yeah, and so Shaman Tales takes place on a world called St. Cloud. It takes place in the future, but this world is an ocean planet. And so the predominant industry by far is fishing. The Pirano family... they have a long-term lease on the planet, like 100 years at a time, and people will live 200 years in this future world. So it's a very, down-to-life, you wouldn't really know it's like in the future or science fiction, other than a few things like it's a different planet. There's certain technology and stuff there as well, mm-hmm. but people are still grinding out their life, right? They're out there fishing, they're on trawlers, they're catching crabs and things like that. And so...
getting by.
Yeah, getting by. And so basically this whole world is this beautiful planet, this beautiful ocean planet. And Nathan Lowell really just creates this great environment. And so, you know, one thing I love about Nathan Lowell is most of his books are a great escape. You know, I get to travel to the world of St. Cloud. I get to, you know, read about fishing. Now, Dave and I grew up on an island.
Yes, we did.
And so we went boating, we went crabbing, we went sailing. I mean, you name it. We grew up on the water. And maybe there's something about this.
For better or for worse.
Yeah. And yeah, it's there was good, the good and the bad. Yeah. And so there's something about this book that appeals to me.
David, it's time for another sailboat trip. Let's go.
Now, David.
Let's go. Time to go sailing again. It's Saturday afternoon. The Oreo game is on. I just want to watch it. It's good. Let's go. Let's go.
Now, David.
Sorry, got distracted by memories.
Yeah. This reminds me of my oldest son. And he is always complaining about having to go do something. But once we get him off the computer and out doing something, he's fine. Mm-hmm. So
I have a feeling Dave wasn't fine.
Not so much. Not so much.
Yeah.
Our Dave was busy bobbing up and down in the water, trying to look at the horizon and not get sick.
Oh, that's right. Get a little seasick.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's not fun.
So this book, Finwell Bay, it basically takes place after Sarah Krug has left the planet. And basically in that book, it was decided, you know, catastrophically so, that again, women could not be shaman.
Wow.
And this planet is also such that if you don't have a job or you're not married to somebody, right, you have to leave the planet because the whole planet is like a one giant corporation.
Oh.
But it is not a uncaring, unfeeling corporation. And, you know, there's the motto of the Perrano family is something along the lines of, you know, feed the world, you know, and it really comes down to, in this book is the whole concept of if people have full stomachs, if people have the money and the wherewithal to eat, then they are generally well, right? There's community around food, right? Food is prosperity. Mm-hmm. And so there's a whole, you know, goal for this Perrano family is it's not like some cold hearted conglomerate. I mean, they realize that their role and kind of their religion is to create food so that people can eat and people can survive, right? Mm-hmm. That food is just a necessity. So there's a lot of, you know, serious undertones in philosophy that goes on in the book. You can probably ignore that, but sometimes there's something that comes up where it's like a light bulb goes on and it makes you think. And so. Mm-hmm. In this book,
I like it when Andrew says there's some really deep, hard-hitting, excellent, earth-shattering philosophy in here. Now you can just ignore that.
Well, some people don't want to, you know, they don't want to read that. And you could just get carried away with the story.
They want to get to the food stuff.
Did you ever suck the jelly out of a jelly donut?
No.
And then fill it with chocolate swirl ice cream?
No jelly donuts in this book.
No,
and so,
okay.
So Jimmy Perrano is the one who's been running this planet.
Jimmy.
Yep, old Jimmy.
Hey, Jimmy.
Good old Jimmy. And so, and I think in this book, only like a couple people actually call him Jimmy.
No.
Right? So anyways, so what's happened is he has been sent back to the home planet, and his older sister, Angela, is now taking over. And so this change just happens. It's announced. Jimmy's going to pack up and leave. His sister shows up. They barely have time to say hi to each other before Jimmy's on a shuttle off planet and Angela basically has to take over. Mm. And so, you know, that's one of the storylines. Another storyline is Otto Krug, who is a shaman, and he's a real shaman. Some of the shamans just inherit the title, but don't have any of the abilities. And the abilities are really more of being able to sense and feel things, right? It's having a strong intuition that something's wrong or something needs to be fixed. So it's not like magic where things are floating around and you're creating, you know, magical spheres above your head.
Is it like this?
I see dead people.
Nothing like that. But it's a very nuanced magic. But it's nice too because it just makes this very believable, right? It's not too much of a stretch beyond where the world that we live in. But it's just enough of a stretch.
Just enough.
Just enough. Mm-hmm. And so Otto is devastated, you know, his wife had died. He had raised his daughter on his own, and now his daughter has had to move off planet. So he's devastated. And that's where the book Cape Grace leaves you. And so this book basically also picks up his story. where he has to move on with his life. And so another storyline here is the auditors who are in charge of, right, because the Pirano family leases this planet. They have a 100-year lease on this planet, which is up in a couple years. And so the auditors come in, and they basically audit the Pirano family's operation of this planet. And of course, they find some serious issues.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Yeah, and so the reason I say women feature very strongly in this book, and of course, they featured very strongly in the last book, but in this book, there is a shift. And there is a shift where, with Angela Pirano now running the planet, she can start to set the balance right in this book.
I get like a Gambino crime family vibe.
Yeah, it seems like it, doesn't it?
Do you get that vibe a little bit?
No, not at all. And it's
because when you say Angela, I picture like I don't know, Tony Soprano's wife or something.
You don't picture the Mona or Angela from Who's the Boss?
No, I definitely don't picture that. No.
No, I you don't get that sense at all. Get a sense. You sort of get the sense that although the whole planet is run by this corporation, mm-hmm. I mean, their corporate building is this small, rundown little shack, right? I mean, you sort of get the idea that it's a shoestring operation.
Okay. Well, that's what they want you to do so they can avoid the taxes.
Well,
right.
Yeah. 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 Or the politicians. So another storyline is the auditors, and the auditors find something, and so they have to set things to right. But women play a large role in setting things to right in the story. And so this book was a refreshing read. It's good to see, things starting to head in a really very positive direction. And the way this book ends as well, it's building a foundation for, you know, a fourth book, right?
Cool.
I don't know if there is going to be a fourth book. But it really builds the foundation where it's kind of restarting, the series, and it's creating a foundation to it could really grow into something else. So I enjoyed this book. It's a great read. It is not the dark stuff that Laura and Dave recommend, but it is Finwell Bay by Nathan Lowell, and it is only been out about a month.
Oh, wow.
All
cool.
Right. Sounds very good. Our very first guest on the show, way back in episode 7. And here we
so
are,
grateful.
Episode 99. Mm-hmm. Thank you to Nathan Lowell for kicking it all off. We appreciate that. And we appreciate you giving this drop that will, no matter how much I tell you we're going to get rid of it, we never will.
Okay, you haven't read everything I've written.
I need to design a virus to go on there.
Just updated the iPad, so I'm pretty sure it's impervious to all viruses. All right, time now for the
audiobook of the week.
Audiobook of the week, and my pick this week is The Cold Millions by Jess Walter. Now, this is really, and it's read by an entire cast of people, so I won't go through it.
Yes. And I like the title of the book. I mean, Cold Millions.
Mm-hmm.
You visualize that.
Yes.
And you're just wondering, because you think like cold hard cash.
Okay.
Cold Millions.
See if you can guess what the book is about based on that title.
I can't. I mean, I would just say it real money. It has to be real money we're talking about here.
No, it is about the start of the labor union in Spokane, Washington in the early 1900s.
Hmm.
And this is a fascinating book. This is riveting and a highly entertaining listen that tells the story of the creation of the labor union, like I said, in Spokane, Washington. It includes many real-life characters, including Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, who was a labor leader, an activist, and a feminist, who was a founding member of the ACLU. And as she is described in this book, a 19-year-old fighter and someone that you want on your side. Whereas the cops would call her a real rabble-rouser.
So did you mention this is historical fiction?
This is historical fiction.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know usually it's Laura who had to step out for a second, but Laura is usually historical fiction Laura. But this week, it falls on my shoulders to, bring a little historical fiction. And I'm not one who really listens to a lot of historical fiction or reads a lot of it, but this one is so, so good. These characters really came to life. And what struck me about the book is how much I felt for the people in this book. So you've got Elizabeth Gurley Brown. Now, she was constantly being thrown in jail for inciting riots and crowds. She fought for the rights of workers, and these workers in the book, specifically in this book, are a couple of guys that we focus on, the young Dolan brothers, Rye, short for Ryan, Ryan and Gig, who almost, at when we first meet them, they seem kind of like they're hobos. They hop freight trains, and they take the odd job when they can. But both brothers get caught up in the labor movement, and I've got to say, I really learned a lot about this movement from reading this book. And you know, this is how I like to learn things, by reading when it's couched in fiction, when it's well written and has interesting characters you root for, and is full of intrigue, and is read for you by a talented cast. And the voices in this book are amazing. So this is a tale of the haves and the have-nots, that dices up slices of life that, and I do know it's a cliche, but it is a cliche for the reason, history in this book really comes to life. I felt like I was back here in the early 1900s, caught up in the emotions and feelings of these characters, including some very memorable ones, including Ursula the Great, who is a vaudeville star who performs with a live cougar.
And I dated an Ursula in Germany.
There you go. Yeah. Did she ever perform with a live cougar?
Oh, boy, did she ever.
I'm sure she did. I'm sure she did. You know, it made me kind of wish we'd been alive back in the vaudeville days. And, you know, you go sit down and watch some of these acts that, you know, have been perfected. People traveling around the country, these kind of sideshows kind of things. You know, that's a lost art. That's something you don't see. We'll never see.
Yeah, there's you know, a culture of performance that basically did not survive the Great Depression.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. It just didn't make it past that.
Yep. I think, you know, maybe Ed Sullivan trying to bring her back. I think he had some plate spinners on there, but there's only so many plate spinners you can watch, you know. Anyway, this book is The Cold Millions. It is really, really good. Let's take a listen to a clip. This is written by Jess Walter, read by a large cast of characters.
The ogre had shot him in the leg, below the groin. He dragged both outlaws to jail, then rode his horse to the hospital, where he promptly underwent surgery, met a nurse half his age, and married her. How could you not want to work for such a man? Sully could grow nostalgic for the rough old days, but he was also clear. The old Klondike town had grown into a proper city, and the time was up for a brute like Clegg, who saw his job as hassling tramps and whores into paying him for protection, and was not above running a girl himself if she came up short.
"Nah, it's the last shift for them old boys," Sullivan said when I complained about Clegg taking booze from the evidence room. He made a point of promoting cops like Hodge and Roth and me. For our brains and our rectitude, I guess. But also because we didn't care if Bill Shannon could throw a keg through a window. Or that Hob Clegg once rode a patrol horse through a burning tavern to rescue a favored sporting girl.
All right, there you go. That is your
audiobook of the week.
Now, and that's back when a million was a lot of money.
That's right. That was a cold million. All right, that's going to do it for us this week. Thank you so much for joining us. If you can, tell a friend, have them listen in. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at The Inside Flap. We appreciate you listening. My name is Dave Medicus. Thank you so much.
Adios.
I'd rather fight 100 structure fires than a wildfire. With a structure fire, you know where your flames are, but in the woods, it can move anywhere. It can come right up behind you. Tom Watson.
Get the F out of there. What the F is wrong with you? Get the F away.